Pete never tried anything like that again, and he never will. Now when he starts acting up during a meeting and they try to hush him, he always hushes. He'll still get up from time to time and wag his head and let us know how tired he is, but it's not a complaint or excuse or warning anymore. He's finished with that. It's like an old clock that won't tell time but won't stop neither. With the hands bent out of shape and the face bare of numbers and the alarm bell rusted silent, an old worthless clock that just keeps ticking and cuckooing without meaning nothing. The group is still tearing into poor Harding when 2 o'clock rolls around. At 2 o'clock, the doctor begins to squirm around in his chair. The meetings are uncomfortable for the doctor unless he's talking about his theory. He'd rather spend his time down in his office, drawing on graphs. He squirms around and finally clears his throat, and the nurse looks at her watch and tells us to bring the tables back in from the tub room and we'll resume this discussion again at 1 tomorrow. The acutes click out of their trance, look for an instant in Harding's direction. Their faces burn with a shame like they've just woke up to the fact that they've been played for suckers again. Some of them go to the tub room across the hall to get the tables. Some wander over to the magazine racks and show a lot of interest in the old McCall's magazines. But what they're all really doing is avoiding Harding. They've been maneuvered again into grilling one of their friends like he was a criminal and they were all prosecutors and judge and jury. For 45 minutes they've been chopping a man to pieces, almost as if they enjoyed it, shooting questions at him. What's he think is the matter with him that he can't please the little lady? Why does he insist she has never had anything to do with another man? How's he expect to get well if he doesn't answer honestly? Questions and insinuations till now they feel bad about it and they don't want to be made more uncomfortable by being near him. McMurphy's eyes follow all of this. He doesn't get out of his chair. He looks puzzled again. He sits in his chair for a while, watching the acutes, scuffing that deck of cards up and down the red stubble on his chin, then finally stands up from his armchair, yawns and stretches and scratches his belly button with a corner of a card, then puts the deck in his pocket and walks over to where Harding is off by himself, sweated to his chair. McMurphy looks down at Harding a minute, then laps his big hand over the back of a nearby wooden chair, swings it around so the back is facing Harding, and straddles it like he'd straddle a tiny horse. Harding hasn't noticed a thing. McMurphy slaps his pockets till he finds his cigarettes and takes one out and lights it. He holds it out in front of him and frowns at the tip, licks his thumb and finger, and arranges the fire to suit him. Each man seems unaware of the other. I can't even tell if Harding's noticed McMurphy at all. Harding's got his thin shoulders folded nearly together around himself, like green wings, and he's sitting very straight near the edge of his chair with his hands trapped between his knees. He's staring straight ahead, humming to himself, trying to look calm. But he's chewing at his cheeks, and this gives him a funny skull grin, not calm at all.